Well, this week I'm releasing part two of my conversation with Susan Spiro. On the last podcast episode, we got a chance to get to know Susan a little bit, how she looks at consulting and leadership. And we had a really healthy discussion around the importance of intention versus perception. Today is part two, where we dig more into her work around creating trust and harmony. And she's actually done some research over the last few years that led into a book that was recently released called Harmony at Work. So tune in for today's episode as we dig into more conversation around that. Enjoy. It's the Leading on Purpose podcast, helping leaders, teams, and organizations lead more intentionally, effectively, and with purpose. So I want to zero in on a particular aspect of your work because I think it connects really well with kind of where this season of podcast episodes is headed. And I'm talking a lot about the Hey Group theory. Mm-hmm. And within that theory, there's basically six leadership styles that are talked about. And best analogy I've ever heard is they're kind of like golf clubs in a bag. And there is a time and place for each club in that bag, but you have to pull out the right club based on the shot that you have to take. And so one of those clubs is called the affiliative leadership style. And I know recently you have put out a book called Harmony at Work. And so what's so fascinating to me is this leadership style, the affiliative style. What's interesting about it, the last several decades, it has only increased in importance. And so if you went back 25, 30 years, really to the beginning of the research that underpins the Hey Group theory, you would actually find that the affiliative was a style that negatively contributed to climate and how people feel working in their job. It wasn't a style that people really aspired to or looked for from their boss. I would say as we've, you know, moved forward into time, it's become Annie in the game as a leader to be able to build trust and harmony through this affiliative style. Now, it's not the only club in the bag, and not every shot is an affiliative shot, but it's such an important style of leadership that I think can be misunderstood, kind of glossed over. And I think it just connects so well with the work that you did behind your book and, you know, where you've kind of centered some focus recently around this idea of harmony at work. So with that, tell me a little bit around what went into the writing of the book and how did you kind of get on that path through, you know, these 35 years of consulting? Why harmony? Why has that been such a topic for you recently?
It's a great question. Part of the motivation is that it's a theme that I've seen with the hundreds of people that I've worked with over the years, regardless of their industry, their level in the organization. It ties to the affiliative style. It ties to what you said in an earlier podcast about if I'm the leader of a team, I carry a lot of the responsibility for creating the climate.
Yeah.
Where the Daves of the world will come to me and say, I got a problem with what you're doing or a problem with what he's doing. And so how do you create harmony? I often say if you have two or more people in the room, you have the potential for conflict. And I've been known to argue with myself when I'm alone in the room. But anytime you get a group of people together, on a good day, the people are in sync. They finish each other's sentences. The trust builds easily. They collaborate and they sail off into the sunset. Most of the days, and some people do that innately, most of us have to learn how to build that trust and that collaboration.
Yep.
For most people, there are at least a few relationships in their professional or their personal life that are kind of prickly.
Yep.
That do not go well or keep them up at night.
Or need a tune-up.
Or need a tune-up or drain so much energy from their emotional and intellectual batteries.
Yeah.
I think you've quoted, and you know the research, that one of the most frequent reasons that people leave a job is because they don't like their boss.
Yeah.
They don't feel supported by their boss. They don't trust their boss. They feel beat up by their boss. Fill in the blank.
Yeah.
And so I wanted to write a book that summarized the bazillion theories and tools that are out there for making your relationships better. And try to put them in one place and create a practical user guide. And so I identified six stages that relationships most often go through when they're evolving.
Yeah.
And because there are a lot of books on relationships, I thought, how to make this different? And I love music and I'm a musician. So I use music as a metaphor for how those relationships evolved. And so the names of the stages are things like auditions and first songs and finales.
Love that about your book.
Thank you.
Yeah.
And within each stage, I describe what the stage is like when I'm just, do I even want to have a relationship with this person? Do I even want to apply for this job or this promotion? As opposed to the last stage when I'm deciding, is the song over?
Yep.
Have I done everything I can do here? I'm bored or I can't make the relationships any better. It's time to move on. Or is it not the finale? And if I do A, B, and C, I could re-energize this relationship, this position, this team.
Mm-hmm.
And so using those six stages, using the music metaphor, including in each stage lots of examples and anecdotes, some of which people have told me they think are fairly amusing, so that we make it a good read. And then each stage, each chapter has specific exercises that people can try to practice what the tools are for that particular stage.
Yep.
So I designed the book so you don't have to read it cover to cover. Great if you do, but you might say the fourth stage, clashing chords, I'm having conflict with someone. I'm just going to read that chapter.
Yeah.
And what are the models and concepts that describe my conflict with this other person? And what are the strategies I can use to try to address the conflict? And then at the end of that chapter, these are some things I can go practice.
So I love the use of the word harmony and frankly love the entire book.
Thank you.
So if you get a chance out there, you're listening to this podcast, harmonyatwork.biz.
Yes.
Is a great place to go check out the book and an interview, a live interview that we did on Zoom just about a month ago. And so if you get a chance, go check that out and pick up a copy of the book. It's on YouTube as well. But I think what's really interesting is the use of the word harmony. And so I want to ask you about that. And when you think about a leader who's trying to pull the right club out of the bag, what would be the intentions behind leaning into, I've got to create some harmony at work? Because I think the word harmony, again, is so fascinating. It's really gotten kind of beat up over the last decade or so as, why would I want kumbaya in the workplace? But that's not really what we're talking about here.
No.
So talk to me about what you've noticed, what leaders are intending to do when they lean into, boy, I need to create some more meaningful relationships. I need to establish some harmony in the workplace.
Great question, John. When I think of harmony in the workplace, it's not kumbaya, although I've been known to sing that song when I was a camp counselor.
It's a good one. It's a good tune.
Not in the workplace. It's about, if I'm the leader of a team or I'm a CEO, how do I create a climate, to use your term, where we can build trust,
yep,
where we can be honest with each other, not just for the sake of being nice, but because we get better results? As you've said in your earlier podcast, if I as the leader, or even as a team member, and you're the leader, if we create a climate that's built on trust and honesty and collaboration and all those good words, we're going to get better results sooner with less stress.
Yeah.
And even when it is stressful, we'll know how to shore each other up.
Yeah.
There was a man, a professor at DU, University of Denver, Carl Larson, I believe.
Okay.
I always want to say Gary Larson, but he's the weird cartoonist.
Yes. Yeah.
Not him.
Not him.
Carl Larson. I think he's long since retired. And one of his concepts, he studied a lot of different teams and partnerships.
Okay.
And one of the consistent characteristics of highly effective teams, whether they were project teams or leadership teams or marital couples or whatever, was the ability of the team members to put the issues honestly on the table. So that if I have an issue with you, I don't go tell a third person I'm mad at John. I'm willing to look you eyeball to eyeball and say, John, I have a problem with what you did yesterday in the meeting. And P.S., if I like what you did, I take the time to say, John, thank you for what you said in the meeting. It was really helpful to me because I felt supported, and I hope you'll do it more often. Whether it's positive or negative feedback, it's part of the culture. It's woven into the fabric of the team that we put the issues on the table, and we have the confidence and the skill and the trust level to deal with them directly, even if we don't always get the solution we want.
I love this. And it kind of strikes me, a lot of things about leadership are counterintuitive.
Yes.
And so I think one of the things that can cause a leader to stiff arm the affiliative style or stiff arm the idea of building harmony is maybe the misguided belief that, boy, what I'm doing here as a leader is maybe establishing a superficial layer with my team. And I think what you're describing here through the research, it's actually the opposite.
Yes.
You're cutting through the BS, and you're creating an environment where we can have real conversations and go to different depths with how we accomplish things, how we talk about things, you know, all those things that are so important to, team dynamics.
And I think some leaders are afraid of the affiliative style. They're afraid of words like harmony and trust.
I agree.
Collaboration. And they're afraid that if they use that style and if they do the overt things that we know they need to do to build trust and harmony, that they'll look soft.
Yeah.
Or they'll say, that's just consultant frou-frou. We just have results, and we just have to the ROI, and we just have to get the bottom line results. And they don't understand that if the climate is hostile and there's friction, it's going to be difficult, if not impossible, for them to get the results and meet the goals that they've set.
Yeah. Well, it's funny. It kind of, when you think about your perception of someone else, and I talk about this a lot when I reference Brené Brown's work on vulnerability, it's kind of one of those things. If you've ever had a leader who actively pursued what we're describing here, used the affiliative style, worked on creating harmony in a non-kumbaya way, in a non-superficial way, in a way intended to create deeper, richer, more meaningful conversations and results, your experience in those situations was, you think about your perception of the boss in those situations, it's not soft. It's like, this person's working their tail off to construct something really meaningful. So it's so interesting. And then when you think about doing it yourself, kind of like vulnerability, you see someone else be vulnerable, your perception of them is that took courage to do that. Absolutely. That took strength. That took investment. But you think about doing it yourself and it's like, oh, well, that's soft.
It's okay for you, but don't ask me to do it.
Yeah. So it's just interesting. Again, counterintuitive, and you kind of flip around.
My book editor wanted me to use a phrase. I think it's somewhere in the description. You need team members who will run through walls for you. Mm-hmm. And they're only going to do that if your efforts to create harmony and trust are real.
Yeah.
And you're not just going through the motions and singing kumbaya. People aren't stupid. They know when you're just going through the motions.
Yeah.
And how do you create a team where people will run through walls for each other?
Yep.
Without hurting themselves so that they're not workers' comp injuries.
Yeah.
But they need to feel that they've got each other's back.
Yeah.
And that if there's a problem, my teammates are going to be there for me, whether they're my peers or my boss or whomever.
Yep. Yep. So we've talked a bit about the discrepancy sometimes between intention and how we're landing, or intention and impact as you describe it. Where can that get someone sideways as a leader when they're, in your research for your book, as you talk about harmony, if I'm intending to create harmony, but that's not what's being perceived, what's been your experience in those situations?
I think the only thing worse than the gap, I'm trying to be helpful and you see me as intrusive. I'm trying to be funny and you see me as sarcastic.
Yeah.
The only thing worse than that gap between the intention and the impact or the perception is when I don't know. And I don't know that I'm off.
Yeah.
Either because I'm not watching your nonverbals.
Yep.
I'm not watching the subtle messages that you're giving me. Or you're a poker face and you're not giving me any messages. Or I've created that environment where you're not willing, like Dave, you're not willing to give me feedback. So the only thing worse than being off is not knowing and sailing off into the sunset and thinking, I told you to go do that project and everything is fine.
Yeah.
An example would be, I say, John, I need for you to do the project. And your response is you cross your arms and you look up on the ceiling and your eyes roll back in your head and you go, okay, I'll do it. And if all I listen to is the okay that came out of your mouth, I'm missing 90% of the message.
Yep.
And I say, cool, John said, okay, on to the next thing in my to-do list.
Yep.
And I've totally ignored the fact that while your mouth said okay, everything else said, I'm furious that you even asked. How dare you?
Yeah.
And I'm not behind this at all.
Yeah. I feel like one of the things I've noticed is, even if, let's say, a leader is doing a really good job of creating an environment that does have an open door and people feel, you know, there's really no barrier in providing honest feedback to how the leader is landing, I don't know what happens, but I think sometimes people can just get comfortable, and for whatever reason, even though the environment is conducive to providing feedback, just, forget it. I'm not going to say anything. And so I've been a big fan over the years of what leaders can do to go sniff out information. So it's not just about sitting in your office with a door open, hoping and someone waiting for it. It's, yeah, you have to create that environment, have the door open, so to speak. But you have to also go out and kind of sniff it out, kind of look for bad news sometimes and find out.
Or good news.
Or good news, yeah.
Ken Blanchard talked about catching people doing something right.
Absolutely.
If you have 10 people reporting to you and 9 of them are doing a good job and 1 is messing up, who's going to get your attention?
Right.
The one squeaky who's messing wheel. Up. Yeah. And so training ourselves, it's human nature to notice the aberration
right.
or the problem. Training ourselves as leaders and as teammates, as peers, to notice when someone did a good job.
Yeah.
Some people say, well, I'm not going to give you good positive feedback because you might get a swelled head, or I shouldn't have to tell you you're doing a good job. You should just know that. I'm only going to tell you when you mess up.
Yeah.
And people have different appetites for how much feedback they want. And
absolutely.
Need.
My cup runneth over exactly. at times. Yeah.
Exactly. But most people need and want some acknowledgement.
Yeah.
And so you're right. The leader that sits in their open door office waiting for the positive and negative feedback to walk in is missing at least half of the story.
Yeah.
And it's not even sniffing out something that's wrong. It's going out and having conversations with people. I met a bank supervisor once. When people say to me, what's a good performance review system? I say, well, I'll tell you about a less bad one. And his system, his bank said, do a performance appraisal once a year. Check the boxes.
Yep.
And he thought to himself, this is totally ineffective. So he disciplined himself. He had about 20 people reporting to him.
Okay.
He disciplined himself to have some touch point with each one once a month,
okay,
which was a lot, but he figured out how to make some of them quick.
Yeah.
So one month, I'm going to send you an email. I'm going to send each of the 20 people an email and just answer 3 questions. And the next month, I'm going to send you an email with the things I noticed, pro and con.
Yeah.
And the next month, we're going to have coffee. So he was creative and he found a different way to collect data, two-way.
Yeah.
Every month. So when he got to the checkbox form at the end of the year, he had 11 data points.
Yeah.
And it was easy and nothing was a surprise.
Yeah, no mysteries.
Because they'd already talked about it.
Yep.
And people would do anything he said because he'd established the trust and he'd established the harmony and they felt comfortable talking about problems. And they knew he'd also notice what was going on. Well, I wish I knew where that guy was because he was very young, but he was creative and perceptive.
Yeah.
And he did exactly what you're talking about.
Went and sniffed it out. Yeah. Yep. So the other thing I think about as you talk about, you know, sniffing that information out and performance reviews is I think the other miss sometimes for people when they think about leaning into the affiliative style or pursuing harmony in the workplace as a leader is the belief that I'm going to have to trade off accountability. And so what, you know, tell me about that aspect of your research. What have you noticed in terms of helping leaders realize you're not actually losing accountability when you establish trust and harmony? And I think the belief sometimes is I can have one or the other. I can be empathetic with people. I can build relationships, or I can hold people accountable to results. How do you see those two more linked than exclusive?
I want to hear more about your question, John, because I'm thinking of a couple different examples, but can you think of an example where a leader saw them as mutually exclusive?
Yeah, I think any time that I work with folks on kind of the softer skills, the softer side of their leadership, I think the belief they have sometimes is, if we head down this path, then I'm going to have to let go of my ability to hold you accountable to your performance, to talk to you about your results. And if we go down this path, then I'm trading all that stuff off.
Right.
And it's been my experience. No, you're actually creating more of that, but right. I want to hear kind of your take on that based on.
So I think your question research. Sort of answers the question, which is that they're not mutually exclusive.
Right.
Number one. And number two, they build on each other. If you and I work together and we've created a climate where there's trust and honesty and harmony, and I'm your supervisor, it's easier for me to hold you accountable because I can say, I got to tell you, John, no one has ever done this so well, and you are exceeding my expectations. You're exceeding the goals, and let's figure out how to keep you challenged. Or that's the good news.
Yeah.
Or John, I got to be honest with you. We set goals every quarter, and you committed to me that you were going to do X, and you haven't done X or Y. So I want to talk about what's getting in your way.
Yep.
And what do you need to do differently? And how can I, as your supervisor, help you? If I've established that trust and that harmony and that honesty, it's much easier for me to hold you accountable without verbally grabbing you by the shoulder.
Yeah.
And saying, listen, Chowderhead, you're failing. Straighten up or you're out of here. Which is how a lot of people approach it.
Yeah.
I've had lots of stories where people are dragged in by the collar. Mm-hmm. The boss doesn't talk to him for months, and they're dragged in and say, I just need to let you know you're not living up to our standards. Our security officer is going to escort you to your desk, clean out your desk, get out.
Yep.
And the person says, I didn't even have my performance review said I was doing a good job. Yep. So there was no feedback. Talk about gaps.
Yeah.
And so I think it's important for leaders to understand what you said a few minutes ago, that they're not mutually exclusive, but in fact, trust and harmony and honesty support the leader's ability to hold their team accountable.
Yep.
And for the team to hold the boss accountable.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's really, you know, my version of how I see the affiliative style overall. So again, going back to the golf clubs in a bag analogy, this is a club that's always available to you and should be always kind of running in the background as a style of leadership. And I always think about it, it's that style of leadership that believes I lead human beings first.
Nice.
And employees second, something a mentor told me one time. And it's that moment someone comes in and they've had a tragedy in their life. And your ability as a leader to realize I've got to set aside all the to-dos, everything else that we would plan to talk about. And just, we need to be human right now. And it's, you know, it's a good compliment, I think, the affiliative style, the pursuit of harmony to some of the other things you're trying to accomplish as a leader.
Right.
You know, when there's high level of harmony and trust, being more visionary becomes easier. Describing and articulating a compelling version of what you want the future to look like becomes easier if you have credibility and trust in the room with your team. Coaching someone, pulling someone aside and providing maybe some tough redirecting feedback becomes a heck of a lot easier if we already have trust and harmony. If there's an underpinning relationship there that we can, you know, what are the trust bank account idea?
Yes.
To make a fair amount of deposits before I can make a hefty withdrawal.
Your comment about we're working with humans first and employees second. I was coaching a manager once, and he was talking about firing this employee. Mm-hmm. And I said, what's your sense about what that's going to do to this person who has no idea that you're going to fire him? And his response was, well, that's not my problem. And I said,
interesting take.
I know. And I said, okay, what is it going to do to your team when you fire him? You don't have anybody in the queue to replace him and
yeah.
his workload. And his response was, Susan, we're all replaceable. And John, I'm not often at a loss for words, but I was stunned by those two responses. I didn't know what to say. Clearly, he was not looking at a human being. He was looking at an employee position. We're all replaceable. Well, okay, sure.
I think that's a healthy, maybe personal perspective to have, which is I am, at the end of the day, replaceable in my role. I'm not indispensable. I'm valuable to this organization. But yeah, I don't think you should see other people as, oh, we'll just go out and get another Susan.
I didn't hear the word valuable in his conversation.
Yeah, it doesn't sound like it.
No. And so that notion, and it's so easy for us to get caught up in the employee goal, accountability, return on investment stuff.
Yeah.
And forget that we're dealing with people who might be having a bad hair day.
Yeah.
And while if you're having a bad hair day, it's not my responsibility to fix it. I'm not your therapist. I'm not your parent. I'm not your
spouse. Hairdresser.
That's true. But I do need to take that into account.
Yeah.
If I want to continue to build trust and harmony and support with you.
Yep.
So that if I'm having a bad day, you might actually be supportive of me and cut me some slack.
Right.
Still hold you accountable, but okay, how can we still meet the goals and how can I accommodate what you're going through?
Agreed.
And that balance that you were talking about.
Yeah. So if you could boil the ocean of all the concepts and ideas in your research and that ended up in your book, Harmony at Work, and to the leaders that are listening to this podcast, what would be the one core piece of advice if they could do nothing else with everything that you've thought about and professed in your book? What would be the one thing?
Hard to boil it down to one thing, but I really think that if people listened better,
mm-hmm.
which implies that they're open
yep.
to other points of view and open to feedback, and open to noticing what's going on underneath the surface of the water, that would stand people in good stead. That would predispose them to do the things you talked about in your prior podcasts.
Yeah.
And what I talk about in the book is if it's sort of like the theories about emotional intelligence.
Yeah.
Feelings and relationships are at the core. Unless you work in a fire tower in Montana or a lighthouse in Maine.
Right.
And even still, you have to be in communication with other people. But most of the time, you're alone in that tower. With those exceptions, we're social beings.
Right.
All the research about babies that don't have enough social contact and nurturing fail to thrive. We're fundamentally social beings. Even if we're raging introverts and we like our alone time, unless we work in that fire tower, we need to have the skills and the courage to build and sustain healthy, harmonious relationships. It doesn't, and you and I have seen this all the time, it doesn't matter how smart I am in my field. I could be the most brilliant engineer, singer, graphic designer, fill in the blank. It doesn't matter how good I am in the technical part of my job.
Right.
If I can't build healthy relationships with the people who are interdependent with me,
yep.
I have less chance, if not zero chance, of succeeding.
Yeah. Well, and it's a tough thing that I think has been inadvertently kind of programmed into people's beliefs around how you grow and develop in a career. It starts and sometimes ends, unfortunately, for some people in their career advancement with technical skills. It's like to continue to advance, I need technical skills. I need to be smarter. I need to know more stuff. I need to be the expert in my field. And certainly that'll get you a long way. But it's amazing to me how many times a person will pursue all that technical knowledge. And then all of the sudden they're asked to lead a team or they advance to maybe the executive level of an organization through technical means, through technical expertise and being kind of the subject matter expert. And all of a sudden, there's these skills, these emotional intelligence skills, these skills that are needed to create harmony in relationships that have just never been worked on. And it's like someone pulled the rug out.
Yep.
It's like, what is this I'm being met with? I don't even know what I'm missing.
How do I motivate you to do things? I'm motivated myself. Why should I have to motivate you if you're on my team? Well, you're not me.
Yeah.
And so I know how to motivate myself, but do I know how to motivate other people without beating them over the head?
Yeah. And so that'd be my encouragement, you know, as I think about the affiliative style and the research and work you've done with your book, Harmony at Work, is think about this sooner than later. Don't wait until you've really hit the wall with the team that you're leading and realizing I haven't worked hard enough to develop credibility, rapport, or trust, or pathways to harmony. I've got all these technical skills, which, okay, great for an individual contributor, but now that you're being asked to lead people, you've got to have some of this arguable softer stuff. The irony is it's, you know, they call it soft skills sometimes. It's really hard. It's hard. It's hard.
And it's interesting to hear you say that, John, because that was part of the motivation for writing the book. Don't wait until things are blowing up around you.
Yeah.
Start thinking about these processes and these skills and how do I build trust at the very before I even engage in the conversation.
Yep.
Is this a company that I really want to work with? Is this a team I really want to be on? Is this a manager I want to work with? Is this a team I want to supervise?
Yeah.
So that if I'm thinking about these things, like you said, they're soft skills that are really hard. If I think about it from the beginning of the relationship, I have a better chance of starting the relationship off on the right foot and building a foundation before we hit our first roadblock.
Yeah. Yeah. I just have a belief that when you're stepping into that new leadership relationship, that too often I talk about this a lot with groups that I facilitate too, when I talk about trust. And I'll use Patrick Lencioni's example. He talks about predictability-based trust versus vulnerability-based trust. Mm-hmm. And I think one of the myths sometimes that leaders have is, well, trust just takes time. And that we're going to enter into this relationship without a lot of intention, but over time, magically somehow, through time only, we will have trust. And so what Lencioni, I think, very accurately describes is what you end up with if you're not careful, if there was no intention behind it, and you're just relying on time and number of interactions, you end up with predictability-based trust, which is basically, if I'm leading you and we've gone to this particular meeting or worked on this type of project four or five times in a row, you trust what I'm going to do because you can predict what I'm going to do next. Well, what if I do something different? What if I show up differently? What if I have a different take on it? Now we're back to the start.
And if I trust that predictably you'll be late on your deadlines or you'll nitpick details or whatever, that doesn't mean I trust you as a person.
Right.
And that I trust you enough to be vulnerable with you and say, I'm uncomfortable with what you just said or did,
yep.
or I'm thrilled with what you just said or did.
Yep.
And it strikes me that the things we're talking about today don't just apply to leaders.
No,
they absolutely don't. Apply to every single person on the team.
Yep.
And sometimes people say, well, how do I manage my boss? My boss is a jerk or my boss doesn't have a clue.
Never heard that one before.
Yeah, I'm sure. What are the things that you can model that if you're lucky, your boss will start to learn how to do? Some bosses are more trainable than others.
Right.
But how can I, as a mere team member, influence the culture in the team and influence the behavior of the boss?
Yes.
And it's harder than if I have some positional power.
Right.
But it's doable and it's part of my responsibility if I want to be a good member of the team.
Right. No, I love that ownership piece that even if you're the one living in the climate, there's still a role for you to play. And good news for the leaders that are listening, it's not all on you.
Right.
I mean, a lion's share is. But your team has a responsibility in this as well to lean in. And
because some leaders can do everything right, and there's still going to be one or two people on the team that just don't want to engage. They don't want to be vulnerable. They don't want to be honest. And I'd like to believe that it's not that they're nasty people. They just don't know how.
Mm-hmm.
Or there's some scar tissue in them, their prior relationships, that it's just too scary for them to be honest. They've had their hands slapped when they were honest.
Yeah.
They've been beat up when they trusted.
Yeah.
So on a good day, I still have faith in humans that we want to do what's right.
Yeah.
And sometimes we just don't have the courage or the strength or the skills.
Yeah, it's hardly ever a question of intention.
Right.
It's, again, that gap between how we feel inside and what we're actually doing about it and how what we're doing is landing.
Exactly.
Yeah. Well, I really appreciate you coming to be on the podcast and be my first guest. And
thank you.
Talk about this really powerful topic around the affiliative leadership style and creating harmony at work as a leader. So again, if you get a chance, you're listening to the podcast, check out harmonyatwork.biz and you can get your hands on her book. Check out a prior interview where we go to even greater depths around the content of the book. You get a really good snapshot of what's in there and what you can expect. But so appreciate having you on, and we'd love to have you on again and talk about some of the other topics that I know you're focused on. One of those being strategic planning. So maybe we can meet up again in the future and have that discussion.
Sounds good. Thank you, John.
Awesome. Thanks so much.
Take care.
So certainly a lot of great ideas there in my conversation with Susan as we think about our use of the affiliative leadership style and our pursuit really as leaders to prioritize and create trust and harmony on our teams. So as we think about our leadership styles, these various things we have the ability to draw upon based on the situation we're in, the affiliative leadership style I typically call a really good backup style. And it's a style that for us as leaders should always be available, always running in the background and really underpinning all of our interactions with our teams. And in later episodes, we'll dig into some of the other leadership styles we have at our disposal. But hopefully this was a helpful foray into what affiliative is all about. And again, how to go about building trust and harmony with your teams. Don't forget to like and subscribe. Really helps me out. Thank you so much for tuning into this two-part episode with Susan Spiro. My thanks to her. Again, if you get an opportunity, check out her book and a prior conversation we had regarding her book at harmonyatwork.biz. Check us out at leadingonpurposeonline.com and reach out. Love to hear from you. Take care.